Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, January 7th, 2016. All sides who signed the August peace deal agreed to the allocation of ministries. At least one analyst says this agreement is a big deal.
This is going to bring down the worry from the public because each of them was thinking that the other would refuse, making the process difficult.
And South Sudanese refugees flee to the DRC to escape ongoing fighting.
It's around 4,000 South Sudanese refugees sought asylum in DRC, and another 2,000 approximately Congolese national UFCs registered refugees in as of settlement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The government of South Sudan, the rebels of the SPLM in opposition, the SPLM former political detainees, and other political parties have all agreed on the allocation of ministries in the proposed transitional government of national unity to be formed by the end of this month. The signatories of the August peace deal agreed that the Kiir administration will nominate ministers for finance and planning, defense and veterans affairs, justice and constitutional affairs, information, communication technology, and postal services, Office of the President, Trade and Industry, Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, Roads and Bridges, Parliamentary Affairs, National Security, Health, Culture, Youth and Sports, Gender, Child and Social Welfare, General Education and Instruction, Livestock and Fisheries, and finally Environment and Forestry. The rebels of the SPLM in opposition will nominate ministers for petroleum, the interior, water resources, labor, public service, human resources development, federal affairs, education, science and technology, energy and dams, humanitarian affairs, disaster management, land, housing and urban development, and the Ministry of Mining. The SPLM former detainees will nominate ministers for foreign affairs and international cooperation, the Ministry of Transportation as well. The other political parties will get to nominate ministers for cabinet affairs, agriculture and food insecurity. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, former president of Botswana, Festus Mohai, who facilitated the selection of the ministries, says all parties to the conflict should cooperate and get on with forming the transitional government of national unity.
Agreeing to a power-sharing arrangement was one of the main obstacles in brokering a peace deal, according to Zechariah Manyak-Biar, a public policy researcher at the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies in Juba. Now that all parties have agreed to the allocation of ministries, Manyak says they can begin to focus on the next stage of the transitional period.
Now that the sides in the agreement have agreed on ministries, this is going to bring down the worry from the public and also among the parties involved because each of them was thinking that the other would refuse, making the process difficult.
Now, the government of South Sudan has been allocated the largest number of ministries at 16, followed by the opposition with 10 ministries. Do you think both parties are satisfied with this arrangement?
The only part that is not happy are the political parties, because they are many and they do not understand why they are given two ministries only. The rest of the parties in the conflict are happy with their share.
The opposition, looking at their ministries, their 10 ministries that have been allocated to them, it seems as if the intention of JMEC was to give them ministries where they're able to build on the interior capacity of the country. So, for example, some of the ministries that the IO has is petroleum, water resources and irrigation, as well as higher education. Do you think that this was intentional on JMEC's side to give SPLM-IO more ministries that focus on the interior capacity of South Sudan?
Not only the interior, it is about where the interest of these people was. For example, the oil is produced in Greater Upper Nile, and most of the people who were in the SPLM-IO come from Greater Upper Nile. So if they are given the Ministry of Petroleum, then their people would be happy with that. And it's not all about the people who will come to Juba, but also about the people who are fighting the war. What they think as important is going to help a lot. As for other ministries that will build the capacity, I mean the power base of IO internally, it would start their preparation for elections if they want to stand in 2018.
Now, how will President Kiir's decree to create 28 states affect this deal?
The SPLM-IO has not recognized the creation of 28 states as legal because they think it is against the peace agreement. Political parties led by Dr. Lama Kol have not recognized that. So if these people do not recognize the 28 states and they want to implement the agreement based on 10 states and the government holds on to its position, then this is now going to become a major obstacle that people would fear. What I would say is this, that what will let people love this agreement is service delivery. If these ministries are given to people who are capable of delivering services, then they are going to mitigate future conflict. And for example, our image is really not good internationally. If people will hit these ministries, can improve our international standing, then we hope things will be okay in the future.
And on that point, do you think that's why JMEC decided to give the former detainees the International Cooperation Ministry?
I personally think so, because they have been good with the international community compared to the other two parties. So if they are given the international, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, then the likelihood of the international community listening to them is higher than if it was given to either of the other two parties.
That was Zechariah Manyak-Biar speaking to me earlier from Juba.
A donor conference for South Sudan is set to take place next week to generate funds for implementing the August peace deal that ended the two-year conflict between government and rebel forces. Both sides have said they don't have the money to provide food and shelter to soldiers. The head of the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism, a body made up of government and opposition officials, along with mediators, says the money would, among other things, buy helicopters to monitor the implementation of the permanent ceasefire. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
The body's executive director, Robert Smith, told reporters after its second meeting that the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring Mechanism, or CTSAMM, will hold a donor pledging conference in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, next week.
We are meeting next week on the 12th of January in Addis for a pledge conference where the international community will pledge what support they will give to the peace agreement, particularly the CTSAM mission.
Smith says the money will help address several bottlenecks hampering efforts to monitor South Sudan's permanent ceasefire.
The donors supporting is not a challenge, but it's a request that they are supporting us with helicopter support, communication, radios, vehicle support, fuel, logistics support all across the monitoring and verification teams throughout South Sudan.
Smith says government and opposition officials, former detainees, and other stakeholders are expected to attend the conference. President Salva Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar have both said they have no money to implement the peace deal. Smith says countries that supported the peace talks that led to the signing of the August peace agreement are invited to attend and to make their pledges. He did not name any country, but the United States Norway, United Kingdom, China, and the European Union have supported the peace process. Smith described yesterday's meeting attended by government, opposition officials, and former detainees as fruitful. He says the peace partners should continue to develop trust among themselves to make sure the peace deal is implemented.
So one is getting all the members here and meeting so they know one another, get eyes, you know, get to discuss, get to know one another, bring up, help them. They bring in issues and concerns and challenges to the board. The board will address those challenges, concerns, because it's about the people of South Sudan. And then we will rally the support of the international community and those stakeholders, key stakeholders, UNMISS, so forth, to aid us in pushing forth the agreement.
Smith says at yesterday's meeting, board members agreed to work in a transparent manner to allow and even promote comprehensive media coverage on the monitoring process. There are 21 members of CTSAMM, including 3 each from the government, the SPLM in opposition, and IGAD member countries which brokered the peace deal. Other stakeholders, including the former political detainees, have 1 member each. Smith says the board will meet again 1 month from now. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
That report was prepared by Philip Thon Aleu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Traditional chiefs in Jonglei State call on the new governor to build more roads. How did he respond? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you more of a leader or a follower?
I would say I'm more of a leader, because in most places I find myself as a team leader. I inspire people through what I do.
I'm more of a follower, but sometimes I act as a leader.
In this question, I am a follower, because I don't like to be like a leader in a specific group. I just want to be with, to bring my level down, to be with everyone.
I'm both. I'm a leader, but in order to be a good leader, you have to follow first. Because we don't all start out as leaders. So I start out following a leader, and I have to respect that leader. Because one day when I become a leader, that you also have to make people follow you. So you have to respect other people's leadership.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some 4,000 people from the newly created Gubduwe state have taken refuge in the Democratic Republic of Congo due to ongoing fighting between local armed groups and the South Sudan Army. The South Sudan Red Cross Society says the refugees need food, shelter, and medical care. We have more for VOA from Gift Friday in Juba.
The head of the South Sudan Red Cross Society in Gudwe State says thousands of people have been affected by the fighting between local militia groups and the South Sudan Army. Alison Martin says residents of several villages in Gudwe State are crossing into DRC in big numbers.
Currently, I don't know the exact number, but it is about 3,000.
Martin says women and children are sleeping under trees, and many of them could become sick from malaria. He says his office has been able to console some of the families who have been traumatized by atrocities committed by the Arrow Boys, but says there are no humanitarian aid agencies assisting the refugees. UN Refugee Agency Public Information Officer Roko Nuri says thousands of South Sudanese refugees need help.
The latest registration number that we have is around 6,000 people in total. It's around 4,000 South Sudanese refugees sought asylum in DRC, and another 2,000 approximately Congolese nationals who have been registered refugees in ESO settlement.
Nuri says the UNHCR office in the Congolese town of Bunia has registered many women and children who have walked for 250 miles to find refuge in DRC. The mayor of Yambio municipality, Daniel Badagbu, traveled with South Sudan security officers to the border with DRC to convince residents fleeing the fighting not to cross into DRC.
Well, the situation is not all that bad because, of course, they are being hosted by their own South Sudanese people. They have not yet crossed to the border. They are still within South Sudan territory. And the majority of them are just children and women. And, of course, you know, children.
Badagbu says the number of people crossing into the DRC has been exaggerated by aid agencies.
Honestly, most of these are rumors. We have not got official communication from Congo. We are now working with them to make sure that we get exact numbers.
The mayor says calm has returned to most of the villages affected by the fighting. He says the South Sudan Army has recovered 2 of 7 cars taken by the Arrow Boys at gunpoint during the fighting in Lirangu Payam last week. Badagbu says the Arrow Boys have fled the area towards Izo County near the border with Central Africa. 7 months of fighting has forced men in Mundri, Maridi and Yambio to flee to the bush, exposing thousands of women and children to hunger and disease. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Meanwhile, as South Sudanese residents continue to flee areas where fighting continues, several UN agencies continue to appeal to donors to provide more funds to help vulnerable South Sudanese. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, says it needs $100 million to provide clean drinking water, shelter, and sanitation. As Philip Thonaleo reports for VOA from Juba, the IOM says implementing the peace deal represents a chance to avert a humanitarian crisis in the country.
Carl Becker, the operations manager for IOM, says humanitarian needs continue to increase in South Sudan, particularly in areas where people are forced to flee their homes and where their incomes are depleted. Becker says these people need assistance to survive.
Consolidated appeal for 2016. It's a combination of life-saving assistance along with some regular programming that we have in South Sudan. Looking at for the life-saving response is $80 million. And additional
$20
million for regular programming.
Becker says IOM also needs additional funding for protection programming to address the growing psychological needs of displaced people traumatized by war, as well as funds to help people transit into new living conditions. He says there are also other basic needs for the people sheltering at Vietnamese protection of civilian sites in South Sudan.
Water and sanitation, non-food items, camp coordination and camp management, health, and then common services within the UN. South Sudan always has challenges. So air operations happen during maybe 6 to 7 months out of the year, and the rest is done by road movement. But that's more seasonal and has always been here. As for the current conflict, I mean, the access has been there. At least within the areas we work in, Bentiu and Malakal, they've still been reachable in the past, I'd say, 2 years.
Becker says there is hope that South Sudanese will end the conflict and work towards rebuilding their lives.
Well, I think the situation will improve for the people of South Sudan as long as the leaders of South Sudan are committed to the peace process. And we're ever hopeful. I think humanitarians always have to have a glimmer of hope, or at least to always be optimists, especially in the situation that happens in South Sudan.
The UN estimates that 6.1 million people will be in need of assistance in 2016 in South Sudan. Of this, the humanitarian community is targeting 5.1 million people for assistance. IOM says it operates mainly in Bor, Bentiu, Wau, and Malakal, providing shelter to people affected by the conflict. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
Traditional chiefs in the New Jonglei state are asking government officials to approve new road construction that would link the state capital of Bor to the counties as well as neighboring states. They say a good road network will improve security and ease the movement of people and goods. More than 100 traditional chiefs from the 3 counties of Bor, Duke, and Tweech East attended a meeting yesterday with New Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguirre to express their views. Speaking in Dinka, Chief Anyang Koryom Dongo of Anyiri Payam, one of the traditional leaders at the meeting, says he wants the state government to focus on road construction in both urban areas and remote, inaccessible villages. Chief Dongo says what the chiefs shared with the governor is the security issues and fear of insecurity. How are the chiefs able to prevent fear, and what should be the first priority? He said they told the governor that the first priority is roads. He says if roads are constructed, everything else will be easy. Chief Gabriel Wat Nyet from Pariak Boma in Bor County says he believes a good network of feeder roads will help restore security, since security agents will find it easier to access well-known insecure hotspots, especially in remote areas. Watt says it's important that the state government also enforce the rights of women and girls in the area. Speaking in Dinka, Chief Machaguto Thon, who resides in Bor Town, says he believes a good road network will ensure stability and motivate many of the area's people who sought refuge elsewhere in South Sudan, in neighboring countries at the height of the fighting, to return home. Chief Aguto says, we need Governor Aguirre to work with us to improve security. Once the security situation improves, everybody will return to their villages. He says people are seeking refuge in distant places because they have no food. Once there are roads and food assistance, he says people from the villages will come back. Bor resident Aleu Anyet says there are already some feeder roads in the area, but they need to be repaired. He says the state government should also construct public facilities like schools and hospitals at the Payam and village levels.
There are a lot of things that need to be done, but everything is related with insecurity. So security need to be improved, but the first of it, the road need to be maintained first from back deeply to the Buj and to the Payam and Bumas. Then the insecurity itself will improve immediately.
Speaking in Dinka, Governor Philip Aguirre says he agrees that roads must be constructed. He says he will provide access to Pariak, a village about 30 kilometers from Bor Town. Aguirre says he understands that for the leaders of Kolnyang, the issue of roads and security are connected. He says from his childhood days up to now, the roads that he has known are two: the road that passes from Kolnyang to Wonguk, Mareng, until it reaches Atok and Bor Road. Most of Junggalai State's roads become impassable during the rainy seasons when large parts of the states are flooded. Roads connecting Bor, Duke, and Tweech East counties were destroyed by flash floods in 2012. Jacob Achek prepared that report for VOA from Bor.
One of the biggest donors to the Democratic Republic of Congo is questioning how the DRC government is spending its money. In a letter to a Congolese newspaper, the British ambassador to the DRC notes that in 2014, the last year for which there were figures, the government spent almost as much on parliament as it did on the country's entire health sector. For VOA, Nick Long files from Goma in eastern DRC.
British Ambassador Graham Zebedee's letter was published Tuesday in a Kinshasa newspaper. In it, he says it's an uncomfortable fact the basic services provided to the Congolese people are mainly funded by the Congolese people themselves, the diaspora, churches, non-governmental organisations, and foreign governments. Official figures on how the DRC government's 2014 budget was spent suggest that funding services is not its top priority. Quoting the letter, the ambassador's deputy, John Lamb, repeated some of those figures.
In 2014, the government spent almost as much for the parliament as for the health sector in the country. And 12% of the financial spending by the government went either to the presidency, to the prime minister's office, or to the parliament, which is as much as went to primary, secondary, and technical education combined. Few other countries in the world are so dependent on outside assistance to meet the basic needs of their people.
No one likes this situation, the letter continues, not the Congolese people and government, nor countries like the United Kingdom, who spend $550 million a year to build the Congolese state.
We're proud to be the second largest development partner of the DRC after the United States, and we fully align our spending with the strategies and priorities of the government. We're here for the long term, but no country can spend these large sums forever.
The letter says Prime Minister Matata Ponyo knows what is needed to lift the country out of poverty, encourage investment, collect more taxes, and invest the revenue according to the country's priorities. It says the DRC must also ensure better coordination of international aid, pay public servants fully and on time, but ensure they do not use their positions for their own benefit. If state assets have to be sold, the letter says, do so for the benefit of the nation, not individuals. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Here is a recap of today's top stories. The government of South Sudan, the rebels of the SPLM in opposition, the SPLM former political detainees, and other political parties have agreed on the allocation of ministers and ministries in the proposed transitional government of national unity, which is to be formed this month. The signatories of the August peace agreement to resolve South Sudan's conflict agreed that the Kiir administration will nominate ministers for finance and planning, defense and veterans affairs, justice and constitutional affairs, information, communication technology, and postal services, offices of the president, trade and industry, and other ministries as well. The SPLMIO will nominate ministers for petroleum, the interior, water resources, labor public service, human resources, federal affairs, education, science, energy and dams, humanitarian affairs, and others. Former detainees and other political parties will also get to nominate some ministries under the agreement. At least one analyst, Zachariah Manyak Bayar of the Ebony or Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says it's an important step toward forming the transitional government. He says it will also calm fears on both sides. And finally, a donor conference for South Sudan is set to take place next week in order to raise funds for implementing the August peace agreement, which ended the two-year conflict between government and rebel forces. Both sides have said they don't have the money to provide food and shelter for soldiers. The head of the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism, a body made up of government and opposition officials along with mediators, says the money would, among other things, buy helicopters to monitor the implementation of the permanent ceasefire agreed to in the deal. The body's executive director, Robert Smith, told reporters after its second meeting in Juba that the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism will hold a donor pledging conference in the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa next week. And that's a look at today's top stories.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Mfike Wa Nyemba by Lucius Banda.
We've been listening to Lucius Banda with the song Mfike Wa Nyamba I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Malomo limbana.